Stocks closed out a very volatile, wild week of trading on Wall Street with a complete travesty on Friday. On Friday, the Dow Jones fell over 400 points, finished the day down 1.3%. The S&P 500 even worse, down 2.3% on the day. The real carnage occurring in the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ finished out Friday down 3.08%. And this was truly a very volatile, but a very weak, bearish week for stocks. Going into this week, we got the CPI reading on Thursday, came in much hotter than expected. For the CPI month over month, we were expecting a 0.2% increase in consumer prices for the month of September. Instead, prices in September rose by 0.4%. If you look at the core CPI month over month, which strips out food and energy costs, those costs rose for consumers by 0.6% in September. And there we were only expecting a 0.4% increase. Of course, that was the economist's forecast. Those of us who listen to this podcast and follow the markets with a real view understand that inflation is going to continue to be very high. But we got the year-over-year CPI numbers. So year-over-year, the inflation rate remains at 8.2%. Again, much worse than expected. And again, this completely trashes the argument that peak inflation is here. Every single month, I keep hearing the stock market bulls, all the analysts on CNBC saying how we're about to hit peak inflation. Prices are going to start to moderate and decline. And month after month after month, these analysts continue to be wrong. Of course, these were the same analysts that were telling you a year ago, a year and a half ago, that inflation was transitory, that it was only going to be around for a few months, not to worry about it. They were completely wrong. They haven't changed their tune. They continue to be wrong. And they continue to get crushed in their investment strategies because they have absolutely no idea what is going on in the economy as it pertains to inflation and the weakness in the consumer and the weakness in markets in general. But again, inflation data coming in much hotter than expected another month. And if we go back and look at the past 29 months, almost all of those months since the ending of the lockdowns, inflation has come in higher than expectations. Now, we also got the producer price index the day prior on Wednesday. The producer price index also came in much worse than expected. We were expecting a 0.2% increase in producer prices for the month of September. Instead, producer prices rose by twice as much, by 0.4% in September. And again, you have to keep in mind all of these percentage increases keep getting added month after month on top of one another. So for example, prices are up 8.2% this year, but that's on top of an already high CPI in 2021. So prices in 2021 increased by about 8% as measured by the CPI. But then this year we've had another 8.2% increase in prices on top of the 8% increase for 2021. So prices are rising exponentially month after month and year after year here, and inflation is continuing to be a huge burden for the middle class and for businesses. So again, the producer price index rose by 0.4% in September alone. If we look at the core producer price index, which again strips out food and energy costs for businesses, that we saw a rise still of 0.3%. So again, we continue to see price pressures on businesses. As we've been saying, as we've been noting in a lot of companies' earning calls, their CEOs keep saying that their costs keep rising, and so they're going to keep passing on their added cost to customers. I talked a couple weeks ago about how the General Mills CEO spoke on their earnings call a few weeks ago about the continued cost pressures they see in their business, the continued supply chain interruptions that they see, and their ability to pass their added costs on to customers because they sell a product that people need to buy. And again, inflation is getting worse on the business side of things. And so inflation is going to continue to get worse on the consumer side of things. But if you look at the producer price index, up 5.4% so far in 2022, which means it's on pace to finish the year up 6.4%. And the core producer price index, stripping out food and energy, is up 4.7% on the year so far, on pace to finish the year at 5.6%. And again, that 5.6% increase in cost and that 6.4% increase in cost is going to get passed on to consumers in the last part of 2022 and in all of 2023. So we have much more inflation in the pipeline. Again, the producer price index is a much more forward-looking indicator on the inflation rate. And if that continues to rise, then either corporate earnings have to get hit if businesses fail to pass their added costs on, or those businesses are going to pass their added costs on, which will help out corporate earnings, but it will hurt the inflation rate and consumer. So either way you slice it, again, we have to have stocks move down as we move into 2023 and further, because again, either corporate earnings are going to go down because businesses fail to pass their costs on, or the much more likely scenario in this case is going to be that businesses are able to pass their costs on. And so therefore, corporate earnings hold up, but so does the inflation rate, which means that stocks become less valuable as far as their multiples are concerned, because the higher inflation is and the higher interest rates are, all else being equal, the less valuable stocks are. So again, with all this inflation data, we are seeing that the Federal Reserve is not doing anything to bend this inflation curve. Even though they've raised interest rates so far this year from 0 to 3.25%, the inflation is not slowing down. It's not moderating at all. In fact, it's continuing to accelerate even faster as we move into the last part of 2022. So again, the Federal Reserve's rate hikes have done nothing to this point. And it's obvious that the reason why is because they've raised rates by 3.25%. But in the same year, the inflation rate was 8.2%. So in other words, if you round those numbers off, the Federal Reserve is about 5% further behind fighting inflation now than they were when the year started, because prices have gone up across the board in the economy by 8.2%, and interest rates have only gone up 3.25%. So again, the Federal Reserve is actually in a much worse position now to fight inflation than they were when January started. And think about all the damage that has been done to both the bond market, the stock market, the real estate market is starting to slow down now. All that damage that's been done by the rate increases to go to 3.25%, and the Federal Reserve hasn't even put a dent in its in inflation yet. So again, this is going to be very bad heading into 2023. The market is now pricing in a 75 basis point rate hike in the Fed meeting in November and another 75 basis point rate hike in the Fed meeting in December. Prior to this week, the market was pricing in a 75 basis point rate hike and then a 50 basis point rate hike. But now that the inflation numbers came in hotter than expected, the markets now expect the Federal Reserve will hike rates even faster to, again, try to get ahead of this inflation curve. But again, 50 basis points, 75 basis points, 100 basis points doesn't really matter at this point. The problem is the Federal Reserve waited way too long to start their inflation fight. So they are a mile behind inflation here, with, as it turns out, with their interest rate hikes. And so no matter how much they raise interest rates from here on out, they are not going to kill inflation. They're not even going to get it to moderate because, again, interest rates remain highly negative. That means they are far behind in their inflation fight. And that means prices are not only going to continue to go up, but the consumer is going to continue to get weaker, and stock prices overall are going to continue to fall. But if we look at the market action this week, this is one of the most volatile weeks that we've had on Wall Street in a very long time. If you go back to Monday, the market was extremely weak. We had stock prices falling, and that was on Fed's Mester, who is the Cleveland Fed president, gave a speech and talked about how the biggest policy risk for the Fed was them not hiking interest rates, and that the Fed had, she acknowledged the Fed is yet to make any progress on lowering inflation, and that it would be a mistake to stop raising interest rates and their inflation fight now. So again, that was extremely bearish for stocks because higher interest rates mean stock prices have to go lower. And here you have an FOMC member saying that the Federal Reserve is not even close to finishing their inflation fight. But then on Tuesday, we got a huge reversal Tuesday. Stocks did open down big on Tuesday, but they rallied back intraday. Now, even if you look at some of the market action on Tuesday, look at DoorDash as an example to see where this volatility is. DoorDash opened the day on Tuesday within the first hour of trading was down 11.5%. By intraday, it rallied back to be down only 2%. And then it finished the day down 6.5%. So there you have almost 20% of swings and volatility in a stock in just one day alone. So it shows you that nobody in the markets have any idea of what's going on. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. Nobody really knows what to expect moving forward from the Federal Reserve. Again, a lot of people have been expecting inflation data to come in weaker than expected. Most people got caught totally off guard this week by this inflation data, but it just shows that nobody really has any clue of what's going on in the markets when meanwhile, it should be very simple to see what's going on in the markets. Now, the reason that we had the huge rally back on Tuesday intraday is because the Bank of England governor, Andrew Bailey, came out with a surprise statement saying that British pension funds and other investors that were hit hard by bond prices had just 3 days left to fix their problems before the central bank would withdraw their support. So in other words, the Bank of England's involvement in the bond market in England is going to stop in the next couple days. And so remember, they immediately pivoted. They were going to fight inflation and they weren't going to blink. Then there was a crisis in their bond market. So they made a pivot, much like the pivot I expect the Federal Reserve to make. And then this week again, they made another complete pivot back. And now they're saying that they're no longer going to support the bond market in 3 days. So again, this is a lot of uncertainty out there. I think a lot of central bankers don't even know what they're doing at this point. They have no idea how to handle this crisis because they've put themselves in between a rock and a hard place between trying to manage price stability and also stability within the markets. Now, it is notable to understand that part of the Bank of England's mandate is market stability. Now, that's a mandate that the Federal Reserve doesn't officially have, but believe me, unofficially, the Federal Reserve cares about market stability. And again, the moment we get instability within our markets, much more severe than what we have now, the Federal Reserve will in fact pivot, stop its inflation fight, and go back to do quantitative easing, money printing, and stimulative policy. But again, that was the catalyst on Tuesday, the news out of the BOE. Now, on Wednesday, stocks were flat. Investors were anticipating on Wednesday the Thursday CPI. And so I think a lot of people didn't want to make any moves on Wednesday going into that CPI print at 8:30 Thursday morning. But on Thursday morning, when that CPI data was released and came out much hotter than expected, there was again a massive reversal from down being down to going and closing the day up a lot. So stocks opened the market getting crushed on Thursday, again, after the release of the CPI, as you would expect. Again, the notion is the hotter that inflation is, the more interest rate hikes are coming. And so therefore, stocks have to go down. But on Thursday morning, after stocks opened down big initially, they rallied back in a massive rally. Stocks really rallied very heavily on that day. It was one of the strongest days for stocks I've seen in some time. Now, again, a lot of it looked like short covering because if you look at the more speculative names in the market that I talk about, like the ARK Fund, DoorDash, Opendoor, Sunrun, things like that, those stocks were down again to start the day anywhere from 7 to 10%, and they rallied back to be just even on the day. The stock market, again, opened down 1.5% on Thursday, rallied back to finish the day up 2%. So again, we're seeing extreme heavy swings in the market, huge volatility. none of this is normal. None of this is healthy for markets. And it just shows you that there is a crisis looming on the way. Again, it is not normal for the S&P 500 to be trading up or down by 3% on any given day. And that's exactly what's been occurring over the last several weeks, especially in the month of October. And as I mentioned, the month of October typically tends to be very weak for stocks. That is following suit here. And also, the month of October is very ominous for stocks in that both the 1929 stock market crash and the 1987 stock market crash occurred in October. Friday, again, was extremely weak for stocks. On Friday, we got core retail sales and retail sales data came in. Retail sales month over month was flat, came in at 0%, so weaker than expected. And core retail sales, which strips out automobile sales, came in at 0.1%. There we were expecting negative 0.1%. So again, this is weak retail data. And that again was provided a catalyst for stocks to try and open up positive. But in fact, they just completely rolled over and Friday was extremely weak. In fact, stocks got sold off more and more as we headed into intraday and the close. But the more notable data was both the consumer sentiment survey that came in and inflation expectations. Both of those came in higher than expected. So consumer sentiment numbers came in at 59.8. Economists were looking for 58.7. So consumer sentiment rose, which shows that consumers are likely to spend more money. And also inflation expectations rose. Last month, consumers were looking for longer-term inflation expectations to be at 4.7%. This month, consumers now expect long-term inflation to be 5.1%. So that's a pretty significant jump in 1 month for inflation expectations. And again, this is a huge data point because the more consumers expect inflation, the more it's going to occur. Because when people expect higher inflation, they spend more now to buy in bulk and avoid higher prices in the future. That causes supply shortages, which then becomes a self-perpetuating spiral that actually causes higher prices in the future. Also, when consumers expect higher prices, they go to their boss and they demand a wage increase. That wage increase puts cost pressures on businesses like we're seeing in the producer price index. And so therefore, businesses now have to raise their prices to recoup the costs of labor in their production. So again, inflation is something that feeds on itself, which is why you never want to let the inflation cat out of the bag. But the inflation cat got out of the bag a long time ago when the Federal Reserve decided to bring interest rates down to zero and leave them there for two decades. And again, they even went more extreme on those inflationary policies at the start of the pandemic. And that is why we're starting to see prices run out of control here and a CPI that comes in hotter than expected every single month. But again, getting back to the markets got absolutely clobbered on Friday, down big on the day. You know, if we look at the way that stocks traded over the course of the week, the S&P 500 only finished the week down 1.7%. But considering how much volatility there was in the markets, it was a much worse week than expected. And again, a lot of individual stocks did much worse than that. If we look at the ARK Innovation Fund, which I always talk about, that fund was down 9.5% on the week, finished the week below $34 per share for that ETF. And a lot of the stocks in that ETF got completely clobbered. But even if we look at the more speculative part of the markets, DoorDash down 13.5% this week. Sunrun was down 16% this week. Opendoor down 14% on the week. DraftKings got clobbered, was down 23% on the week. And again, this is the best time of the year for the stocks like DraftKings because of football season. This stock is getting absolutely killed. And a lot of these stocks like DoorDash or Sunrun, Opendoor, DraftKings, they're already down more than 50% on the year, yet they continue to free fall seemingly every week. Again, they just continue to slide this slope of hope where the stock prices get clobbered every single week. And there really is no end in sight for the selling in these names. Look at Tesla. Tesla was down 8% on the week. Tesla is now down 32.5% in the last 30 days. It's in 30 days, this stock has been cut in a third. Now, again, Tesla is still completely overvalued, but this was one of the cult stocks, the stocks that all the bulls were piling into, right? Everyone had their hopes and dreams tied to this company. Investors are getting taken to the woodshed in Tesla. Again, 32.5% in 1 month alone. But moving from the crazy speculation stocks to actual real growth companies and cyclical stocks, again, a lot of pain there. Zillow was down 25% in the past month. Disney down 14.7% in the past month. Look at shares of Ford down 21.6% in the past month. Nike, another blue chip stock, down 17% in the past month. Look at some of the more consumer-based cyclical names. Lululemon, everyone loves that stock, down 14% in the last month. Look at Under Armour, down 17% in the last month. Look, we go to Facebook, that's down 15% last month. And Facebook is now down 61% in the past year. This stock has gotten absolutely crushed. Again, there's no end in sight for this stock because not only are they losing market share to TikTok, but also you have a lot less ad spending from small businesses or corporations because they're cutting their budgets because we have a recession. They're starting to see declines in their businesses, so they're spending less on marketing. That's less revenue for Facebook, and so this stock continues to get hammered. Look at Applied Materials. Again, another stock that everyone on CNBC loves. This stock was down 15% on the month, continues to free fall like a lot of the other names in the semiconductor space, right? But all these stocks are getting killed. And, you know, auto stocks held up relatively well on the week considering how bad the damage was in the stock market. If you look at Ford, GM, AutoNation, they all held up relatively well, up about 1% on the week. But again, that's following a huge decline on the month for these stocks. And they're looking like they're about to roll over as well. So again, a lot of weakness in the markets overall. And you can continue to see stocks across the board get hammered. And, you know, if we look at the massive reversal that we had on Thursday, again, had investors known the CPI print before it was released and known that it was going to come in twice as high as expected, they would have guessed that the markets would have gotten clobbered on Thursday, especially since you've had so many people expecting that inflation has peaked. So a lot of people were probably expecting the CPI data to come in better than expected. And so a lot of people probably were not buying stocks going into this print. Again, stocks were flat on Wednesday. But the fact that stocks rallied heavily after the CPI data was released, again, is not a bullish sign to me. I think a lot of people were thinking that stocks have possibly bottomed, right? That all the bad news was in. Again, there's basically three big data points that markets have been looking at coming into this week. One was the CPI that got reported on Thursday. The other was the FOMC meeting that comes up in November on the 2nd. And then the third was the midterm election on November 8th. And with the release of this CPI, not only did we get that first piece of news out of the way, but now markets can price in the 75 basis point rate hikes in November and December. And so that just leaves the midterm election open as the only big data point that markets are looking at for the next month. And really, it's very easy to tell that the Republicans are going to probably take both the House and the Senate going into that election because of all the carnage in the economy. And so, you know, markets typically tend to like when one party has the House and Senate and one party has the presidency. So I think that that was probably a reason for why we had some relief rally on Thursday. But again, it was short-lived. It's not normal for markets to rally like that. I think a lot of Thursday's market action was short covering. People got too bearish going into the CPI print. And so when stocks started to rally, a lot of people who were short probably had to cover, right? A lot of people were probably shorting the lows. But again, on Thursday afternoon, it was apparent that that was going to end. And then again, on Friday, we got a huge reversal. Stocks got slammed. And again, the bears remain completely in control in this market. And believe me, there is plenty of downside left here. The markets still have a long way to fall as we wrap up 2022 and head into 2023. Now, if we move to the bond market for just a minute, the U.S. 10-year Treasury rates on the U.S. 10-year got over 4% again this week, finished the week at 4.02%. And we see interest rates rising in bonds across the international markets, right? If you look at the German Bund, the German 10-year is now yielding 2.34%. Now, just 6 months ago, this bond actually had a negative nominal rate where it was yielding less than 0%. So you actually had nominal negative rates in Germany just 6 months ago, and rates have risen over 2% on the 10-year since then. And if we look at the UK 10-year, that is now yielding 4.3%. So the yield on that is now far higher than the yield on a US 10-year treasury, right? So there is investor demand for bonds in other markets, but not here, or sorry, in US, but not in other markets, because again, there's a lot of problems going on in the British bond market. There's a lot of problems going on in the Japanese bond market. There's a lot of problems going on in the German bond market, and German bonds do not provide anywhere close of enough yield to get investors to come in and buy their bonds. But again, we continue to see rates rising across the board in all economies. And again, even if you look at rates on the short end of the curve, the U.S. one-year treasury now yields 4.48%. On a U.S. two-year, you can get 4.49%. And on a U.S. five-year, you can get 4.2%. And again, on a U.S. 10-year, you can get 4%. So rates are rising across the board at every part of the yield curve in all bond markets. And again, this is providing tons of pressure on stocks all over the world. If you look at markets across the world, a lot of markets are also down heavily on the year. And a big reason for why emerging market stocks continue to get crushed is not only because rates are rising in other bond markets, but because the US dollar is rising as well. The US dollar index finished the week above 113, which is a fresh high for this move in the dollar. Again, the dollar continues its move up in this massive blow-off top that it's creating. The move for the dollar this year has been substantial, to say the least. The dollar is up almost 20% this year on foreign exchange markets, and it continues to rally, again, as inflation data continues to come in worse than expected, yet everyone seems to think, for some reason, the Federal Reserve is going to fight this inflation. Again, everyone is wrong. As I mentioned, the Federal Reserve is now behind the inflation curve even more now than they were when the year started. When the year started, the inflation rate was high, but they had interest rates at zero. Now the inflation rate went up another 8.2% on this year, yet interest rates have only gone up 3.25%. So again, the Federal Reserve is 5% further behind the inflation curve now than they were when the year started. But the US dollar is now at a 32-year high against the Japanese yen. It's also making new fresh highs against the euro, and the British pound continues to be weak. The dollar continues to rise against all currencies across the board. And interestingly enough, I actually noticed today when I was at the gym, the DXY, the dollar index symbol, is now appearing on the CNBC ticker watch list. So when you watch CNBC, you have the stock watch list scroll at the bottom of the screen. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, you have where they post the S&P 500, the Dow, Bitcoin. And now they have bonds, currencies. Now they have the DXY is up there. This is the first time I've seen this. And I remember the first time they put the Bitcoin ticker on there was right at the end of 2017, the first time Bitcoin made its major run up to 20,000 and then completely crashed back to 3,000. That when CNBC put the Bitcoin ticker up there on CNBC, that was basically the top in Bitcoin for that move. So it was just interesting that I observed that the DXY symbol is now on that ticker watch list. maybe that's a sign that the Dixie is starting to top out here and that the dollar is about to make its next major move lower rather than higher. But again, that's speculative. It's anecdotal. I don't want to focus too much on that. But again, the dollar is definitely closer to a top than most people realize. And one of the worst things that can happen for the U.S. economy is if the dollar cracks and starts to fall, because that means inflation will get much worse, and that will be much worse for the U.S. economy long term. Now, again, on the week, the S&P 500 finished the week down 1.7%. Not too bad, but considering all the volatility, it was a pretty bad week overall. The real carnage was again in the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ was down 3% on the week, and the Dow Jones, believe it or not, actually finished positive, up 0.7 on the week. A big contributing factor there was both JP Morgan Chase and Pepsi rallying after earnings. I'll cover that in a little bit. But again, as you see, as you go further out on the risk curve, the losses in stocks get much worse. The Dow Jones is down 19% this year. The S&P 500 is now down 25% this year. And the NASDAQ is down 35% year to date. So in the last 10 months, the NASDAQ is down 35%. Again, a massive clobbering. And again, a lot of investors did not see this coming at all. You go back to December 2021 or January 2022, all investors on CNBC or anywhere in mainstream news were extremely bullish on stocks, calling for new all-time record highs, nothing to worry about, inflation's transitory, it's going to go away, interest rates aren't going to go up very much. Everybody was completely wrong. Again, people don't get this. Inflation is an expansion of the money supply and credit. The cause that it has on the economy is it causes consumer prices to rise. But as long as money and credit continue to be endless for people who want to take on new credit, inflation is not going away. Now, again, I mentioned that the dollar index symbol now appears on CNBC's scrolling ticker at the bottom of the screen. Something else that occurs on CNBC quite often is we continue to see appearances from Fundstrat's Tom Lee. I saw Tom Lee on Closing Bell again today. Now, again, this guy, I've been very critical of him, but he has been very wrong in 2022. He is one of the biggest stock market bulls out there. He was making ridiculous calls on the S&P 500 when the year started. He has continued to be bullish this entire way down in the markets, and he's been incredibly wrong, yet CNBC continues to invite him on seemingly week after week after week. And again, he loses no credibility. He continues to get invited on. He continues to talk about his view on the markets. Nobody gives him any pushback, and this guy has been completely wrong, and he has lost people that follow his research a ton of money this year, and again, it's going to get much worse. But just to show you the craziness on Tom Lee and his predictions on the markets, his 2022 year-end price target on the S&P 500 when the year started was 5,300. Now, we started the year at 4,796, so just call it 4,800. Okay, so in order for us to have finished the year at 5,300, he was expecting stocks to go up about 11% on the year for 2022. So, okay, you know, maybe he thought the highs were going to keep going and we were going to make new highs. Fine. But to reach that point at this point, right, to get to 5,300 from where we are now, the S&P 500 is now at 3,583. That's where it closed the week. So to reach 5,300 from 3,583, the S&P 500 would have to increase 47% from here into year end. Not going to happen. Okay. So 2 months ago, he had to come out and lower his S&P 500 target because, again, a move like that is not going to happen within a couple months. It's obvious. So it's obvious at this point that he's been completely wrong. But when he came out 2 months ago, he moved his target down from 5,300 to 4,800, which means that he still expected stocks to finish flat on the year. If we were going to make 4,800 by year end, we would have to have another 33% rally from here into the end of December in order to make that price target. Again, not going to happen. So his new price target as of today is 4,300. So he had to move his price target down a second time this year. And if you think about where that is, he still has his price target at 4,300. Okay. We would need another 20% rally in stocks from here through December in order for that to happen. Now, again, there's only 2.5 months left in the trading year. So he expects a 20% move up in just 2.5 months. This just after a hotter than expected CPI. This just after getting news that the consumer is weakening and retail sales are collapsing. And he could not be more wrong. But again, he refuses to change his view on the markets. He refuses to give any other perspective consideration. And he remains extremely bullish. And again, nobody on CNBC challenges him on this. And they just roll him out every week to talk his book. And he continues to be wrong week after week, month after month. Now, again, this guy was also calling for Bitcoin to be at 100,000 by year end. Bitcoin, as I'm speaking, is trading at $19,100. So right now, as of right now, he's missed that mark by 80%. Bitcoin is 80% lower than where he thought it would be at year end. And, you know, Bitcoin has actually been holding the 19,000 level pretty well lately, the last couple weeks, but it's continuing to fail to rally back over 20,000. And so to me, there's a lot more downside risk than upside potential in Bitcoin at this point. So by the time we get to the end of the year, Bitcoin could completely crash back down below 10,000 or back down below 5,000, who even knows. But again, Bitcoin is getting crushed on the year. Bitcoin down 60% on the year, by the way. But I'll get into that more in a little bit. But again, this guy, Tom Lee, one of the major bulls on the stock market, has been dead wrong this year. And again, nobody holds him accountable for it. But he has been completely wrong because he doesn't understand anything that is going on in these markets. Now, of course, if we move into gold, I know a lot of people might say, well, you know, you've been completely wrong on gold. So how can you criticize Tom Lee for being wrong on the S&P 500? Well, first of all, I've been 100% right on the direction of the S&P 500. You go back to the podcast that I put out to start 2022 with my predictions for the year. I said that stocks were going to get crushed, and I said it's because the bond market was going to get crushed. And that's exactly what's happened. The bond market has gotten crushed. Interest rates have moved up substantially, and those higher interest rates have taken stock prices much lower. Again, we're down 25% on the S&P 500. I've been right about that until this point. But I know a lot of the people who are listening to this podcast are more frustrated over the price action in gold. Now, we closed the week at $1,643 per ounce for the price of gold. Now, to take it into perspective, we started the year with gold at $1,829 per ounce. So gold so far this year, as of Friday, is down 10.1% on the year. Now, if you ask me, to the extent that you own gold instead of buying the S&P 500, or God forbid you bought the NASDAQ, or God forbid you even bought Bitcoin, you are doing much better by holding gold than holding any of those other assets, right? Again, gold is down 10.1% on the year, but the S&P 500 is down 25%, right? If you own bonds, bonds are down about 30%, right? The NASDAQ is down 35% and Bitcoin is down 60%. So to the extent you listen to me and you bought physical gold, you're actually doing much better than basically everybody in the markets is. Now, of course, I know nobody bought gold with the intention of having the price go down. But again, the reason that the gold price is down so much is because the US dollar price is up so much in foreign exchange markets. One thing I did not see coming this year was the strength in the US dollar and in the US dollar index. What I underestimated was people's expectations for the Federal Reserve and being able to fight this inflation off. So again, we continue to see month after month, the CPI comes in much worse than expected. But every time the CPI comes in and inflation data comes in worse than expected, people sell gold and buy dollars because they anticipate higher future interest rates from the Federal Reserve to fight that inflation off. But again, as I continue to say this, at some point, investors are going to have to recognize that the Federal Reserve is falling further and further behind the inflation curve, and they are never going to stop this inflation. In fact, it's going to continue to get worse and continue to accelerate into 2023, 2024, 2025. And at some point, people are going to have to start buying gold and selling dollars when higher than expected inflation data comes in. Again, what I underestimated was people's ability to understand what is going on here as it pertains to inflation in the U.S. economy. But believe me, at some point, when the Federal Reserve is forced to pivot because their higher interest rates kill the economy but don't kill inflation, and they are forced to pivot in the face of higher inflation data, everyone is going to be selling dollars and buying gold. Now, to the extent that you bought gold mining stocks, those stocks are getting crushed right now, just as the rest of the market is. But those are a different story from buying actual physical gold itself. Gold mining stocks are very risky investments, okay? First of all, there's a lot of uncertainties in the gold mining business, right? There's a lot that can go wrong in the gold mining business. But also, costs in the gold mining businesses rise. Now, typically when you have inflation, the cost pressures for those businesses rise, as we see in the producer price index, but also typically the price of gold goes up to offset those rising costs. But again, one of the themes I've been talking about for investing in this environment is to own businesses that can pass higher costs onto their customers. If you think of a gold mining business, they can only pass their added costs onto their customers if the market allows them to. In other words, they can only do it if the price of gold goes up, right? Because they sell their gold at the market price. They don't get to choose the price of gold that they sell their gold at. So these gold mining businesses are very risky. But again, keep this in perspective. Gold is down 10.1% on the year so far. The gold mining stocks, though, have gotten completely crushed. If you look at the GDX, which is the Senior Gold Mining Index, that is down 27% year to date. So again, it's slightly underperforming the S&P 500. The GDXJ, which is the junior mining companies, again, further out on the risk curve here, that's down 32% year to date. And then if you look at the Europac Gold Fund, that is down 27% year to date. So gold mining stocks are down much more than the price of gold so far this year. Again, I know that's been frustrating to a lot of people who listen to this podcast, because a lot of people who listen to this podcast happen to own a lot of these different stocks. But again, keep in mind, these gold stocks are leveraged to the price of gold. So again, as we see, the price of gold is down 10% on the year. These stocks are down anywhere from 27 to 32%, right? So if gold goes up, say, 10 or 20% from here, these gold mining stocks could go up anywhere from 30 to 40% or even 50%, right? So to the extent you don't own these gold mining stocks yet, this could be a good time for you to get in and buy some of them if you can stomach the risk and the volatility in these stocks. But if gold does what I'm confident it will do, then a lot of these gold mining stocks are going to go up 100 to 300% because I think the price of gold from here could easily double or triple. Right. Once people recognize that inflation is here to stay for this entire decade and the Federal Reserve, A, can't do anything about it, and B, doesn't have the ability to do anything about it, they are going to want to be buying gold hand over fist. And again, the price of gold is going to take off. And so therefore, a lot of these mining companies are great investment opportunities for people who can stomach the risk to own them. Now, if you don't want to take risk, you can buy gold itself, physical gold. And again, that's outperforming every part of the markets this year, whether it be the Dow Jones, the S&P, the NASDAQ, or bonds. So again, gold, physical gold is safety, but these gold mining businesses are risky. But again, to the extent that you purchase Bitcoin instead of gold to hedge inflation this year, you're down 60% if you bought at the beginning of the year. Again, much more speculative. The downside risk in Bitcoin far outweighs the upside potential or any other cryptocurrencies. Is who else is, if Bitcoin is going to continue to follow the NASDAQ, Bitcoin's going a lot lower because the NASDAQ is going a lot lower. And again, the question you have to ask yourself is the upside potential in Bitcoin worth the downside in the beginning? But the only reason Bitcoin ran up in the first place is because we were seeing a lot of speculation in the markets. Now that that speculation has gone away, then there's no reason to even own these stocks or own cryptocurrencies, right? So again, Bitcoin has much more downside here. This is a very good time if you can stomach the risk and you want more upside potential than gold has to get into some of the gold mining stocks. And again, these stocks pay good dividends, so you're still back up. Again, the price of gold will go back up just so long as the dollar continues to fall and starts to crack. So that is what we really have to look out for. And again, you know, a lot of this has to do with people thinking that inflation is going to go down. But again, it's inflation is not going down anytime soon. So we just have to keep that in mind as we move forward. Now, oil, I also want to talk a little bit about oil because oil also had a very volatile week. Now, there's two basic things going on here. One, you have production cuts coming out of OPEC. And two, you have recession fears. So recession fears typically will bring down the price of oil, but a lack of production will cause the price of oil to go up with supply and demand. And as I've been saying, in this recession that we're in, that's going to get worse. Oil prices are not going to move lower as they typically would, because the thing with oil prices is that there's such a limited supply because we haven't had production of it in the past decade, that those supply constraints are going to continue to keep the oil price elevated and moving higher. But OPEC is pushing back against the Biden administration. You know, the Biden administration has been selling a lot of oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to try and keep gas prices down. They've also threatened to disable domestic oil from being exported overseas to places like Europe. So they're trying to keep oil within the United States. And again, the Biden administration is doing their best to try and manipulate the oil price lower. And OPEC is starting to push back on that. And so they're cutting production, they're raising inventory, and they're disallowing oil to go back onto the markets to try and get the oil price to go higher. And again, that's why you see that there's going to be a lot of oil constraints with supply as we move forward. You look, we got crude oil inventories this week. Inventories piled up to 9.9 million barrels, much higher than we've had in the past several weeks. So again, the oil price is going to continue to move higher, especially again, as we head into the winter season and we have more demand for oil, but less supply. We also got some notable earnings this week. Pepsi was the first notable company to report this week. They started off earnings season in a good way. They had 16% growth in their business and their earnings per share grew by 14% year over year. Now, this company has not missed earnings per share estimates in over a decade, right? So they are an overperformer. But one of the things that's notable here is that they noted that they have hiked their prices for all their products by an average of 17% year over year. Now, I thought the CPI said that prices have increased by 8.2% for the year. Well, if that's the case, then why do you see companies like Pepsi increasing their prices by 17%? Again, the real inflation rate is shown by what businesses are actually doing in the economy. So if you look at businesses, and Pepsi's not the only one, you know, I talked again a couple weeks ago about General Mills. They have raised their prices by 14% across the board year over year, and they expect to do it again from 2022 to 2023. So again, the real inflation rate is much higher than the inflation rate of 8.2% as reported by the CPI, yet nobody seems to even care or recognize this. But again, prices across the board for Pepsi products, and they sell not only beverages, but all sorts of consumer snack products, up 17% year over year. Now, you know, again, it's a very tough investing environment, right? There are very few stocks that are performing well in this environment. But again, keep in perspective, some of the stocks that are holding up better are some of the stocks that you can own, you know, forever. And a lot of them are consumer staple stocks like Pepsi. You know, Coca-Cola is down about 10% in the past month and a half, 2 months. But again, it's holding up much better relative to the S&P 500, right? You think of stocks like Chevron, General Mills, Kellogg, Merck, Novartis, right? Healthcare stocks, consumer staple stocks, they're all holding up very well, right? And a lot of these stocks typically tend to have lower price to earnings ratios, right? So they make them much more conservative investments, right? You're not overpaying for a lot of these stocks. And again, look at the key themes in some of these stocks. Long track record for producing earnings. They have a durable competitive advantage, right? They have great brands or they have great products. They have some sort of an edge over their competition. These businesses have high barriers to entry. So again, healthcare, right? Pharmaceuticals companies, very high barrier to entry. There's not a lot of new businesses that can come in and compete with these big pharmaceutical companies because regulatory burdens and regulatory costs are so high, right? So again, a lot of those stocks are the ones that are performing relatively well. Now, again, a lot of these stocks like the Coca-Colas of the world or Merck, General Mills, you know, they're not really performing that well, even though they're performing relatively well compared to the rest of the markets. But once the Fed pivots and stops its inflation fight and people realize how toxic it is to hold U.S. dollars and they realize they got to get rid of those dollars, then they're going to start buying these stocks because they're going to start looking for inflation hedges. Again, gold is down because nobody is looking for inflation hedges. So since nobody is looking for inflation hedges, you know, you're going to have these stocks underperform. But once people want inflation hedges, they're going to buy gold. They're going to buy the value stocks. They're going to buy the stocks that have a long track record for producing earnings, the stocks that have low PE ratios, the stocks that pay dividends, the stocks that can increase their dividends in a recession because they sell products that people need and they're not going to have their sales impacted as much as other cyclical businesses that a lot of the stock market bulls tend to own. But, you know, again, we got more bad news this week. Intel laid off 20% of its employees this week. Again, more bad news on the labor markets. Unemployment claims came in again at about 235,000 initial unemployment claims, right? But really, the dollar index is moving up. So stock prices are moving down, right? But once the dollar index starts to crack and the dollar starts to head a lot lower, a lot of the, again, value-oriented stocks, emerging market stocks are going to start to take off. And the dollar will keep rising as long as the Federal Reserve continues its path and commitment to fight inflation. The question is, how committed to fighting inflation is Jerome Powell, and what market event is going to cause Jerome Powell to throw up the white flag and surrender in his inflation fight? Now, the Federal Reserve, through all of the volatility this week in the markets, did not shrink its balance sheet at all. So again, all the weakness in the bond market, all the weakness in stocks, the Federal Reserve did not allow interest rates in the bond market to rise themselves because they did not sell any of their bonds into the market. So the Fed will never break this inflation curve. Even if you look at a chart of their balance sheet, you go back to January, the balance sheet was at about $8.75 billion worth of assets. Today, the balance sheet stands at about $8.75 trillion worth of assets. So they are right where they started at the beginning of January. So think about how much inflation has occurred from January until now, right? And the Federal Reserve has not made any increase or any progress in shrinking their balance sheet, right? Because again, for the first part of the year, the first 3 or 4 months, the Federal Reserve was continuing to increase its balance sheet. They were continuing to print more money to buy more bonds and more mortgage-backed securities, put them on the balance sheet, and increase the money supply and liquidity in the markets. They have so far only reversed what they have done in the first part of this year. So again, as far as their quantitative tightening program is going, they have just started on that program. They have a long way to go here. Again, they are not even putting a dent in the inflation problem that we have. And again, people's financial behaviors are going to continue to not change until interest rates reach a positive real level, right? People are not going to save money as long as the inflation rate is higher than the interest that they're getting paid on their savings, right? And people are spending everything they're making and much more than they're actually earning, because people continue to take on more and more consumer credit every single month. You know, the savings rate is now at its lowest level ever in the history of the United States, right? So you have the savings rate is dropping substantially because people are spending too much money on the stuff they need with inflation, right? So you have a weakening economy and you have no savings for capital investment. People are not saving money because they don't have any reason to. One, they don't have the means to save any money because everything they're buying is too expensive. And two, nobody is being encouraged to save money because interest rates are still way too low. Now, one of the reasons, and I haven't covered this, I don't believe, but one of the reasons that it's important for people to save money to break the back of inflation is because when you have savings available for capital investment, that allows for more business formation to actually build more products and services for the economy. And that additional supply brought on by that additional creation of products and services can lower prices. But again, as we're heading into recession, not only are we not going to have business expansion to create a bigger supply of goods, but we're actually going to have business contraction. You're going to have a lot of people lose their jobs. A lot of businesses are going to go out of business. And so as we move into 2023 and 2024, you're actually going to have less supply of goods and services. And so inflation is only going to get worse and worse, right? And even the few people in the economy who are quote unquote saving money, they're not actually saving it, right? They're investing it. Because just like myself, for example, I'm saving money, but I'm not saving it in the sense that I'm not putting it in a checking or savings account in a bank and letting it sit there. I'm taking my money and I'm purchasing stocks with it, right? So that's a big difference, because that I'm not actually saving money. I'm actually spending money in the economy and there's a flow of money going on, right? In order for the Fed to break the back of inflation, they need interest rates high enough to where people are actually willing to take their money and pile it up in a checkings or savings account in a bank to actually accrue a real rate of interest. But again, the Federal Reserve is no closer to that today than they were in January when the year started. And even with the small increase in interest rates from 0 to 3.25%, inflation is still running out of control and the stock market has completely tanked. We're down 25% on the year again on the S&P 500, and things continue to get much worse. But looking at, again, the weakness in the consumer, we also got some bank earnings on Friday. JP Morgan Chase kicked it off. They had earnings per share of $3.12, beating the expectation of $2.88. They also had revenue came in better than expected. Trading revenue came in better than expected. Investment banking revenue better than expected. right? Because again, people are not saving money, but they are investing it, right? And also, you have a lot more consumers are reliant on more debt because prices keep going up, but real wages are declining. And so people continue to borrow more money on their credit cards, right? And so that is helping bank earnings, but that is a sign of a weak economy, right? So again, we see this in Wells Fargo as well, right? They beat on their top and bottom line earnings, again, because they're giving out more lines of credit now because consumers need more credit. Credit conditions are still so loose that anyone can get approved for credit. And again, if people have a fallback to an endless amount of credit, then that means that you're going to continue to see prices are going to move up because demand is going to stay high. And if businesses raise their prices, well, their customers are just going to continue to pay it, right? Morgan Stanley also reported earnings. Now, they actually missed on the top and bottom lines because, again, they work on the investment side of things. Investment activity is down with new IPOs going on the market, right? Because Wall Street is getting clobbered, stocks are down big on the year. So you have Morgan Stanley is struggling, right? But again, credit remains endless. So therefore, inflation is going to remain endless. You look at American Express, Visa, MasterCard, they're all having their best business years ever, right? Because people continue to open new credit cards, swipe their credit cards to buy things that they need because they can't afford the things that they need because real living standards are declining. Wages are increasing, but they are increasing less than the cost of living. So every American now is worse off today than they were in January when the year started, because not only are they paying higher prices for the things that they need, but also their stock portfolios are getting clobbered. Their housing prices are not going up anymore, right? And yet everything they need to buy continues to go up in price. And again, they can't go to their employers and get wage increases that are high enough to actually compensate for the high cost of living. So again, the economy continues to weaken and things are getting much worse as we head later into this month. But we have a big week of earnings ahead. There's no notable economic data that comes out next week, but we do have a lot more Fed members speaking. And you know, a lot of Fed members have been speaking recently to the markets to try and calm the markets down. You have some Fed members are actually signaling that the Fed should slow down in its inflation fight. But again, we see inflation continuing to accelerate. And so therefore, we're going to have to meet this crossroads at some point. But again, earnings holding up for less cyclical businesses is what we should expect because inflation is remaining high. So that is helping increase flow of money throughout the economy, which is helping corporate earnings. Either way, earnings are going to either hold up and the medium term for stocks have to collapse because higher earnings means higher inflation and higher interest rates. If earnings don't hold up, then we're going to have a collapse in the stock market anyway, because earnings are the only positive factor that the markets have going for them right now. But once the Fed witnesses severe issues in this economy from this rate raising cycle, they are going to slam on the brakes on their inflation fight and pivot right back to easy money and stop interest rates from rising. That will allow value stocks to take part in a rise in the market, while the bond market is going to collapse, right? That's going to take growth stock valuations with it, tech stocks down with it, cyclical stocks down with it. That is why the dollar's days are numbered and why soon consumer staples, commodity stocks, emerging market stocks, and defensive stocks will be back in the saddle soon enough. That is where the investment returns will be generated over the next several years, and that is where we need to be.